The story is called "We Used to Live Here." It's a 4-chapter series, and this is chapter 1. The family on my doorstep looked normal enough. Normal in a 1950s sitcom kind of way. Tall, handsome dad, petite blonde wife, and behind them, three young blue-eyed kids lined up by height. One girl and two boys. This was the type of family that showed up early to get the front row pew. "Hello, miss," said the father. "Sorry to bother you so late." "Hey, how can I help you?"
"I grew up in this house."
"Oh, nice."
He cleared his throat. "Would you mind if we showed the kids around?"
"Like, inside the house?"
He nodded. "Show them where their dad grew up, if it's not too much of a problem."
"I'm not sure. My girlfriend's coming home soon, and..."
The mother winced at the word girlfriend, almost like someone had spat in her face. So I pretended not to see it. The father only smiled.
"We'd only need 10 minutes. 15 minutes tops."
"Yeah, we're still moving in, and it's a bit of a mess, and..."
"Say no more." He put his hands up in a little surrender and stepped back. "This is all very last minute, and thank you regardless."
Muted disappointment fell all over the kids' faces.
"We'll give you a proper heads up next time," he added.
"Might be passing by in another year or two."
They all proceeded to turn around and stared down back the snow-covered driveway, watching them go. My ever-present people personality kicked into gear.
"Right on cue."
"Wait," I said.
15 minutes?
The father looked back over his shoulder. "Tops." My girlfriend Charlie and I had just moved in. A killer deal on a 2-story at the end of a quiet suburban street, all surrounded by rolling hills and an old forest. "Barbie's gothic dream house," Charlie joked. "It needed some work, but that was our thing. Fix up old houses, flip them, and move on. Lucrative if you do it right." Neighborhood felt good, too. A young married couple from across the street, Hopper and Miguel, invited us over for game night next week. An actual game night. 2 married couples playing board games. Isn't that like the settling down suburbia dream? Granted, Charlie and I weren't married yet, but we talked about it. And for some reason, this house was starting to make that feel possible. Anyways, there I was, alone on a Friday night, on this excruciatingly perfect family showed up on my doorstep. I followed them through the upstairs hallway. "This room used to be painted blue," said the father, pointing into a green walled guest room. He strode forward as his family followed. "This room," he nudged open a half-closed door, "used to be a library. Now it's just a storage room." "Oh, that's what it was until we figured out what to do with it."
He kept walking, sharing a brief and mundane fact in each doorway, and then stopped in his tracks as if remembering something. Turning around, he stared at the wall, puzzled.
"What happened to the dumbwaiter?"
The what?
He placed a hand flat against the wall. "Used to be a dumbwaiter chute here."
I don't know."
He slid his hand down until it snagged. Leaning forward, he squinted. Beneath the wallpaper was a square bump.
"A handle?"
"Huh." He stepped back. "Looks like somebody covered it up." He glanced towards the kids. "There used to be a dumbwaiter chute here. Went all the way down to the basement."
They stared at him confused.
"It's like a mini elevator," he explained. "We need it for the laundry." Then the kids nodded. That mother checked the time on her wristwatch and then crossed her arms, impatient. As the father moved on, the family trailed behind him, and he stopped at the last room, a closed door, and he reached out. He froze. Silent. "This used to be your Auntie Abigail's room," he said, studying the door like it was a sad painting.
A strange gloom hung in the air. I sensed a private moment, so I cleared my throat. Feel free to keep showing yourselves around. I'll be downstairs if you need anything. He looked back at me and smiled, grateful. I was downstairs by now, hammer in hand, prying rusty nails out from above the fireplace mantel. Judging by the discolored rectangles on the walls, several small paintings used to hang here. But they must have been hung crooked. All shifted a little bit too far to the right. And just as I wrenched out the last nail, the family filed into the living room behind me. The father strolled over to the basement door. "Your grandparents used to measure our heights here," he said, running a hand over the frame's smooth white finish. "All painted over now, though." He tried for the handle, locked, looking towards me. He opened his mouth to speak, but in the kitchen, the oven timer went off. "One second," I said, setting down the hammer. I crossed over and turned off the timer. The father blinked at me. "Can we go into the basement?" he asked, hands still gripped around the doorknob. "Oh, shoot." Oh, I shook my head. "Sorry, we're renovating down there. Lots of tools laying around. Not exactly safe." Opening the oven, I pulled out a steaming roast. "We'll be careful," he said. "The lights are out too," I said as I set down the roast. "No work lights set up yet?" "Not yet." His face twitched for the briefest of moments, and then all smiles as he released the doorknob and backed away from the door. "All right, no problem," he relented. I hadn't even been down there yet, but according to Charlie, the basement was a little fucky. An old ladybird patchwork with extra bits added over the decades. According to the neighborhood legend, the house architect was a little bit eccentric, to put lightly. "All right, gang, let's head out," said the father. "Don't want to overstay our welcome." He motioned his family into the foyer, but as they filed out, he meandered his way back towards the kitchen. "Thanks again for letting us have a look around," he said. "Meant a lot to the kids." "No problem." Honestly, it didn't look like it meant shit to the kids, but I kept that to myself. Lingering at the edge of the kitchen, he glanced back towards his family, as if making sure they were out of earshot. Content, he turned to face me, curious. This is kind of odd, but did you ever notice anything?" A commotion in the foyer cut him off. "Excuse me," he said as he went to investigate. Intrigued, so I followed. By the front door, two young boys argued over something when a mother tried to calm them down. "Where's Jenny?" said the father. No response, and the boys kept arguing. "Where's Jenny?" he boomed, his voice resonating with sudden authority. The room fell silent, and everyone looked around. No Jenny in sight. She was just here," said the mother. "Jenny?" the father called out. No response. He sighed, rubbing his temples as he turned back to me. "I'm really sorry about this. Jenny, our youngest, she likes to hide." "Hide?" "Spontaneous hide and seek. We've been trying to correct it, but..." "Jenny," the mom called out in the background. "We should find her easily enough," he continued. "Gosh, this is so embarrassing," as he continued to shake his head, blushing. No, it's okay." He turned away. "Jenny, come on out now," trying to hide his irritation in his voice. As the family searched the house, I wandered up to the front door and stared at the window. Now gentle snow was falling. Where was Charlie? She should have been home 30 minutes ago. I pulled up my phone and 2 missed calls. Both from her, of course, so I called back, and 3 tones rang out. Voicemail. Hey, Charlie, I said. My phone was on silent. Call me back. Upstairs, something whistled. One of the boys had found something. Call me back when you can. Drive safe. Tucking my phone away, I hurried upstairs. The family stood huddled in the middle of the hallway, facing the wall. Stepping forward, I peered over the mother's shoulder to see what they were investigating. A hanging flap of wallpaper had been torn back, revealing the dumbwaiter chute. A rusty metal door ajar, but no elevator car in sight. Fuck. This could only mean one thing. Jenny, the missing kid, was hiding in the basement. Flashlights in hand, the father and I descended into the darkened staircase. So much for the basement being off limits. The rest of his family lingered behind us, wary. At the bottom of the steps, the father looked around and huffed. His light scammed through rickety shelves, aging support beams, and sagging cobwebs. Down here, the dad always seemed nervous, like this pace brought up bad memories. "Know the basement well?" he asked. "Not really," I said. "Charlie's way more familiar with the layout." "Charlie? Oh, that's my girlfriend." "Right. I don't think I caught your name, by the way."
"Eve."
"That's a good name," he said. "I'm Thomas, my wife's Paige. You can just call the kids Headache 1, Headache 2, and Headache 3. He glanced at me, expecting a laugh. I managed a slight chuckle. Squatting down, he swept his light over the floor. "She's probably in full-on hiding mode now. We should split up, cover more ground that way." I furrowed my brow, skeptical. "You have to be quiet," Thomas pushed off his knee to stand. "If you see Jenny, try and grab her, or she'll just run away and hide again." "She's boss," his voice strained with the exhaustion of having done this one too many times.
"You're sure? Just grab her?"
"Yeah, it's fine. Still part of the game." Looking to his right, he whispered, "I'll go this way. And you get out here?" He nodded to the left. "Sure," I replied, still unsure of his plan. He turned and disappeared around the corner. I moved left and was greeted by a long, empty hallway. Creepy. I trudged forward. This sucked. And Charlie was right. This basement was fucky. All sorts of nooks and pockets. Rounding the next corner, I shone light into a garage-like room. Mostly empty, save for a row of metal shelves. And sitting in the far corner, a coat rack besides a dozen or so empty picture frames. A cold draft pushed through me, shivering, and I stepped forward. And then something clattered against the concrete. I startled myself. I turned to look across the room. A tin can rolled across the floor. A mess of nails and screws. Great. Now this stupid kid's gonna step on a rusty nail and get tinnitus, and the parents are gonna sue us. Fuck. I strolled over and set the flashlight down. I used my hands to sweep the nails back into the tin can. As I swept, the flashlight started to roll away. Uneven floors. Nice. I set my foot out to block it, and something in the beam of light caught my eye. Or rather, hundreds of somethings. Ants. A trail of black ants merging along the bottom of the far wall. Fantastic. Add pest control to the unexpected expenses list. Frustrated, I grabbed my torch. And I sludged over. The ants led around the corner deeper into the basement, all marching in the same direction. Is that normal ant behavior? Aren't they supposed to march both ways? Vague memories from a Nat Geo documentary echo in my head. I shrugged it off and I followed the trail. I rounded the corner into another long, uninviting corridor. The ants trooped into receding darkness. I could almost hear their little feet tapping against the concrete, but where were they going? Curiosity built up in front of me. Curiosity built inside of me, and I crept forward. Halfway down the hallway, they took a hard turn into a makeshift wine cellar. I stepped inside. Stone floor, arched brazed ceilings, old empty barrel racks. This room almost looked medieval. And the ants ran in a straight line towards the furthest back corner, disappearing out of sight. I crossed over and hunched down, and they filed into the crack at the bottom of the wall. Once on the other side, I raised my flashlight, and behind me, two quick footsteps scraped over the concrete. I spun around. About 20 feet away in the room's entrance stood the father, back turned. His posture was strange, almost rigid, arms straight at his sides, flashlight aiming at the floor. He was motionless.
Hey, I called out. I got no response. I stood up and glanced around the room. He was blocking my only way in or out. Thomas? Silence. That was his name, right? Clearing my throat, I stepped forward, a growing pit of dread in my stomach. I was just about to call out again, but he started whispering, talking to the blank space in front of him. What are you doing down here, Abby? We've been looking everywhere for you. Thomas? I said louder now. No response. He just kept talking to the dead air, exasperated. I'm not sure how much longer we can do this, he said. I thought you were on board. I moved closer, reached down, touched the back of his shoulder, and holy Christ! Thomas spun around, setting a hand against his chest. You're a quiet one, he exhaled, catching his breath. I stammered, still in a bit of a shock. Collecting himself, he chuckled. You almost gave me a heart attack. I called for you like 3 times. Who are you talking to? He stared at me, sincerely confused. Come again? You were whispering. He shrugged, unsure of what I meant. Disturbed, I looked back over my shoulder, just in time to glimpse the last of the ants receding into the wall. Any luck? He asked. Turning back, I shook my head. Yeah, me neither. Caught a glimpse of her, but she slipped away. Anyways, we should head up. Jenny will get spooked down here soon enough and put up the white flag. I agreed. Besides, now I just wanted to get the fuck out of this basement. Upstairs, the rest of the family sat around the living room, fireplace, comfortable. Battle of the wills now, said Thomas. His wife gave a slight nod. Still feeling unsettled, I wandered off into the foyer by myself. Why weren't they more concerned about their missing kid? And what the hell just happened in the basement? And more importantly, where the fuck was Charlie? She should have been here like an hour ago, and I pulled out my phone, and the front door swung open, and Charlie stepped through. I'm late, the roads are shit, getting shittier, she said, shaking off some snow. What's with the moving truck? The what? There's a 1-ton parked at the end of... As if to answer the question, the father stepped into the foyer. Charlie shot him a puzzled look. This is Thomas. He grew up here as a kid. He was showing his family around, and now our daughter is playing solo hide-and-seek in the basement, he said apologetically. Oh yeah, my brother used to do that. She shot her hand out for a shake. Name's Charlie. Charlie Bayston. They shook hands, a firm single shake. Charlie was my emotional polar opposite. Chill with everybody. Confident, extroverted, trusting, and direct. Good at setting boundaries, too. Any hidden rooms or ghost stories we should know about? She asked, hanging out for a jacket. Thomas cleared his throat. It's a ghost-free house, he smiled. Anyways, don't let us spoil your night. She'll give up any minute now. I've never seen her hold out too long. We can go and sit in the truck if you want some space. Charlie scoffed. Sit in a truck? You might as well join us for dinner. I think we'll be alright. We've had a big lunch. Lunch? Come on, join us. Eve always makes more than enough. Thomas smiled tepidly, looking like he didn't want to impose. Part of me wanted to grab Charlie by the arm and tell her to drop it, but I didn't. She hadn't seen Thomas's whispering episode in the basement. And that being said, maybe I was overreacting. I had a bit of a reputation for that. Sure, he said as he relented. But only if it's not a problem, he glanced over to me as if checking for my approval. But I just shrugged, looking away. Wouldn't be offering it if it was, said Charlie. The fireplace cackled. Winds outside billowed. The creaks and groans of the old house filled the silence. Minus the daughter, we were all seated around the dinner table now. Charlie came across and grabbed the wine corkscrew. Maybe that kid will smell the food and give up, she said. Chuckling softly, Thomas picked up his fork and... Thomas! Hissed Paige's wife. He set the fork down and cleared his throat. Would it be alright if we said a quick prayer before eating? Charlie shot me a look. Not wanting to impose, he said. This is your house, after all. Yeah, it's okay, I said.
Gratefully, he smiled. Bowing their heads, they shut their eyes. I never had a problem with prayer. I grew up in a religious household myself, and I still value some of those lessons. But for every great lesson, there was something that made me question who I was. Paige cleared her throat. We'd like to thank Eve and Charlie, the hosts of this house, and for allowing us to eat with them. Considering our traditionalist family period, I would have expected Thomas to lead the prayer. But as Paige prayed, I glanced over at Thomas. His eyes were wide open, staring blankly at the tablecloth in front of him. He looked distant, almost out of place. Was he even religious? I mean, down in the basement, he took the precious Lord's in vain, so... Paige continued. We'd like to thank God for our health, our family, and our friends, and we thank you for allowing us to have a fresh start as we move across the country. Amen. Amen, I mumbled, an old reflex back from the den. Charlie shot me another look, this time a playful smirk, and glanced away embarrassed. So you're moving, huh? Twisting the cork out of a red wine bottle, Charlie poured herself a glass. What prompted that? Needed a fresh start, said Thomas. Where to? Asked Charlie. Oh, downstate. Oh, this is delicious, by the way, Paige cut in, looking at Charlie. It's really appreciated. Don't thank me. Eve's the master cook tonight. Charlie held up the bottle. Wine? Thomas shook his head. We don't drink. Very wise, said Charlie. She glanced at the two boys. Listen to your parents, kiddos. Paige smiled and opened her mouth to speak. But a techno cover of Beethoven's Fifth Cut-In. Dun 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 dun. Charlie put out her phone. Oh, my bad. She muted as she went to go put it away. The screen caught her eye. Oh, shit. She held it up for me to see. Notification. Dangerous driving conditions along number 5 connector. Winter tires recommended. Said Thomas. Roads are getting worse, Charlie said as she tucked her phone away. Hopefully that kid shows up soon, huh? She will. Just have to give her some space. Charlie glanced at the time. It looks like she's going for the hide-and-seek record tonight. You guys got winter tires? I used to drive long-haul trucks year-round. We'll be fine. Charlie grabbed the salt. There's some tire chains in the attic. We'll be fine, he insisted. Paige looked at him concerned. Are you sure it's worth risking? Mouthful of food, he half-shrugged. Paige, deflecting Tom's indifference, shifted topic. Are you married? Us? I asked. She nodded. Charlie almost scoffed. Nope. Paige nodded again, as if to say, I expected as much. Are you religious? She asked, looking directly at me now. What? Me? No, not really. I mean, I used to be. I only asked because I noticed the Bible in the living room. Oh, that was a gift from my parents. We used to go to church together. Smiling tight, Paige jabbed her fork into the roast and started sawing with a steak knife. What about them? Who? I asked, starting to feel interrogated. Your parents, do they still go to church? Yeah. What denomination? Lutheran. And are they aware? Her eyes flickered to Charlie and then back to me. Paige glanced at her children's as if her falling words might be too much for their innocent ears. Aware of you and, your friends' lifestyle choices. They are lifestyle choices? And they accept it? I felt really uncomfortable at this point. I opened my mouth to respond, but I was when Charlie cut in, showing in a mouthful of roast. What about yours? Paige looked at her. Your parents. They know about your lifestyle choices? Paige furrowed her brow. I don't understand what you're getting at, she said pointedly. Paige, Thomas intervened. That's enough. Paige stared at Charlie for a long moment, but Charlie didn't break eye contact. Finally, Paige looked away and returned to eating. As a chronic conflict avoider, I was actually relieved when Thomas stepped in. But Charlie, she was chomping at the bit, ready to fucking battle. Had I not been there, she would have gone in until Mary Magdalene started crying. I was only curious, Paige relented. And right then, a blistering gust of wind slammed against the windows. The house lights flickered. Thomas looked over his shoulder.
Hopefully the power holds out. He turned back to the table. Went down all the time when I lived here, he said, trying his best to change the topic. The rest of the meal dragged on in tedious silence. The table had been cleared. The kitchen had been cleaned. And now, I was leaning over, settling kindling into the fireplace. Outside, it was a full-on blizzard. Wind whipped the quick piling and snow in frenzy. Thomas had already gone down to the basement several more times, but still no Jenny was in sight. I still couldn't shake how calm he and Paige were about it. Calm might be an understatement. It was bordering on apathetic. Eve, said Thomas, stepping into the living room. Yeah, I replied, crumpling a bowl of newspaper kindling. Know any nearby motels by chance? Nothing close by that I can think of. Silence hung by in the air, almost like he expected me to say something more. I continued. I mean, worst case scenario, you guys can crash here for the night. I regretted those words the second that I spoke them. But in my defense, that daughter was still missing. What was I gonna do, send them off into a blizzard one kid short? Are you sure? He said. We wouldn't want to impose. We can sleep in the truck too. You've already done so much. No, that's fine. Well, thank you, Eve. I'm sure Jenny will show up soon, but just in case that she doesn't, that really means a lot to us. We can compensate you financially for all the trouble too. That's okay. But sure enough, Jenny remained a no-show. And about another hour clocked by until the family finally retired for the night. The two boys into an upstairs guest room, Thomas and Paige into the adjacent bedrooms. Despite being married, they didn't sleep in the same room. Yikes, I almost felt bad for them. Alone at last, Charlie and I shared a blanket on the living room couch. The warmth from the fireplace slinger filled the room. Charlie leaned forward and grabbed a bottle of wine off the coffee table, noticing the hammer and bent nails in before. Took out the nails. She looked up at the empty wall. From above the fireplace. Yeah. What? That's why I was going to hang out crucifix. I smiled. Stop. Leaning back, she twisted the bottle opener into the cork. You seem on edge tonight. Is something up? I mean, besides our new roomies. I just feel something off about them. Agreed, but everything feels off to you. She popped the cork back out and started pouring herself a glass. I know, I need specifics. Well, before you got back, Thomas and I were in the basement looking for the kid and... Charlie finished pouring and set the bottle down. She looked at me attentively. She used to say I was overreacting to things, but lately she's been working on her empathy and active listening skills. The effort was appreciated. In the wine cellar, I continued. I heard footsteps, and when I looked back, the dad, Thomas, he was just standing there, back turned, blocking the entrance. I called out to him like 3 times, but he didn't even respond. He just kept whispering to someone named Abby. I think that was his sister's name, but nobody was there. And then he just snapped out of it. So he was standing in a doorway, whispering? Was he talking to the daughter, maybe? No, her name is Jenny. I don't know. Maybe I'm overreacting. What do you think? About the family? Yeah. Charlie took a big long sip. To me, casual bigotry aside, she handed me the glass of wine. They seem pretty unremarkable. Or at the very least, I doubt they're going to murder us in our sleep. And as Charlie shifted away, a shiny glint caught my eye. I turned to look. She was wearing a new necklace, a thin silver chain with an oval locket. What's that? I asked. What's a necklace? I rolled my eyes. Charlie reached down and popped the locket. Held it up. Inside was a photo, a blurry picture of me, hiding my face behind a single hand. I remembered the moment instantly. When we first started dating, Charlie always joked about how less than zero pictures of me existed. I was notoriously camera shy. I still am. So one day, Charlie, 35 milliliter Pentax in hands, snuck up from behind me, but I saw her at the last second, turned away and held up my hand and hid my face. Close call. Charlie clicked the locket shut. "It's the only known photo of Eve Palmer," she said. "When did you get it made?" "Today in town." "A little cheesy, huh?" "No, I think it's sweet." Charlie was never the sentimental type, but I was a big sap, so the locket was an open surprise. Behind us, Thomas stepped into the living room, groggy, rubbing his eyes. He glanced down, surprised to see us there. "Hey," said Charlie. "Mind if I sit?" "Sure," I relented. Yawning, he wandered over to the armchair beside the fireplace and slumped down. Flickering shadows danced on his face as he looked around the room. His eyes seemed to be filled with memories. After a long, ponderous silence, he finally spoke. "My parents. Oh, they used to make us stand over in that corner," pointed across the room. "They called it the quiet corner." Chuckling, he leaned back into his chair, and his eyes caught the bottle of the wine. "Go for it." He leaned forward and grabbed a spare glass and pouring. "So much for not drinking." "Trouble sleeping?" asked Charlie. Setting the bottle down, he nodded and took a sip. "A kid should give up soon enough," she reassured him. He nodded again, detached. "They're not even ours," he said, looking into the fire now. "They're my wife's deadbeat brother-in-law's kids. We adopted them." Uncomfortable silence. "That's good of you," I offered. "I guess. I didn't have much of a say in it, though," he shrugged. Taking another sip, he turned away from the fire. "I'm really sorry about my wife's comments earlier at the dinner table." He smiled grimly. "I never got the obsession with people's personal lives. Pretty sure Jesus has more things to worry about." Charlie and I nodded, appreciating his effort, or at the very least. He seemed well-meaning. He chugged the rest of his wine and set the glass down. "Anyways, I'll let you be." He sat to stand, but... "Earlier," I replied, "you wanted to tell me something." Thomas stared at me, puzzled. "Before your daughter started hiding, you asked if I had ever noticed anything..." "Oh," he said, understanding now. "That's stupid," he waved a hand. "Don't worry about it." He turned to leave, but... "Wait," said Charlie. "No, I'm curious." He sighed. "Oh, you know, it's just weird things would happen here when I was a kid, is all." "What kind of weird things?" Charlie never believed in ghosts, but she sure as hell loved hearing stories. And so did I. "I mean, I don't think it's haunted." Thomas paused, debating whether to share more. Relentingly, he sat back down. He let out a long sigh and then said, "We'd been living here for about 3 years when my sister started to believe that the house was changing. She'd wake up not recognizing her own rooms, said weird things like the walls were a different color now, and the furniture was getting swapped out. But she was the only one who could see it. To everyone else, myself included, it was always the same house that it always was." He paused, rubbing his square chin with a knuckle. "Mom and Dad told her it was just nightmares. But then, she started forgetting faces. People she'd known her whole life had become strangers." He sighed and then regretfully. "Our parents never took her to the doctors. They didn't believe in that. They believed in prayer. So we tried that for about half a year or so, and that was when she just vanished." Thomas went silent, eyes flicking back and forth across the firewall. "One winter, she just disappeared. In the middle of the night, the police did a 3-day search and nothing ever came up." He shook his head again, but then about 1 week later,
witness came forward and said that they saw a young girl down by the river that same night standing on the kettle bridge. The cops said that she probably jumped. Case closed, right? It made sense to my parents, but I just... He furrowed his brow, weighing his next words carefully. It's strange, but part of me wonder if she ever even... Thomas paused for a moment. Despite all the searching, all the diving teams, they never found anything, and I just... He stopped himself again and then looked towards us. Anyways, that's about it, he said with a somber finality, eyes apologizing for the dark story. I'm really sorry to hear that, said Charlie. He gave a slight shrug and turned towards the fire. Guess I thought coming back here would bring me some sort of closure, but... He trailed into silence. Muffled wind and aching creaks and groans from the house filled the empty space. I didn't know what to say. Thomas's gaze drifted up to the blank, paintingless wall above the fireplace mantle. His face twitched ever so slightly. Anyways, he said, I should get back to sleep. He pushed up to standing. Good night. Night. He drifted out of the room and went back upstairs. Charlie waited for a moment to be sure that he was gone. What the fuck? Fair enough. We went to bed shortly after. Charlie was out in 5 minutes flat. But after hearing that story, I lay wide awake, staring up the stucco ceiling. Considering what happened and why anyone would bring their family back here, how was he even sleeping while his daughter was still missing? I couldn't shake any of this, but after finally 2 hours or so, I somehow managed to fall asleep. A distant clang snapped me awake. I sat up, listened carefully, wind outside, clock ticking, Charlie breathing. Okay, you're fine. Climbing from bed, I stretched up my arms and shook out my hands. Maybe the dad's story was just getting to me, but either way, I needed a glass of water. Down in the kitchen, I sipped on lukewarm tap water from a tall glass, ruminating on the strangeness of everything. When will that stupid kid finally show up? Across the living room, the basement door was wide open. Maybe this kid finally caved in. Setting down the glass, I crossed to the top of the steps and peered down. Uninviting darkness. No, thank you. I set down the glass when I crossed to the top of the steps and peered down. Uninviting darkness. No, thank you. I was about to close the door when at the bottom of the stairs, a small silhouette, motionless child side, enveloped by shadow. Jenny, the missing kid. I squatted down to appear less intimidating, the same way one does when trying to coax an unfamiliar cat. Hey, Jenny, I said, almost whispering. Your parents are really worried about you. Do you think it might be a good time to come back upstairs? Her head tilted, but always she remained motionless. Now that I could see the slightest glimmer in her eyes reflecting the moonlight, a long silence dragged by. Until I realized something else. She wasn't blinking. 10, maybe 20 seconds had gone by, and she hadn't blinked. Not even once. What the hell? And then, as if reacting to my realization, the figure slowly rose to stand, and it wasn't child-sized after all. And then, I realized it wasn't child-sized after all. It was only hunched down, and now standing at their full height, the person at the bottom of the stairs must have been 6 feet tall. In one quick motion, I jumped upright and slammed the door shut. I scrambled upstairs with record breaking speed. No fucking thank you. I shook Charlie awake. What? She mumbled. There's someone in the basement. Charlie blinked at me. Yeah, the kid. No, an adult. Charlie shook her head and reluctantly pushed up the sitting. How do you know? I saw them on the stairs. They were tall. Charlie sighed. I could tell part of her wanted to believe me, but mostly she was just tired. In her defense, I had a long history of freaking out over things that turned out to be nothing. Was it dark? She asked, trying and failing to sound patient. Yeah, but... Eve, she said, I'm exhausted and still a little drunk. Can we figure this out in the morning? Charlie, I know what I saw. I know, I believe you, but not enough to look around the basement at 3 a.m. I didn't want to let it go, but Charlie was close to her breaking point and barely awake on top of it. Okay, I relented. Maybe she was right. Maybe it was just a trick of the light. Maybe my paranoia was getting the better of me once again. But Charlie rolled away and dozed back to sleep. I sat up beside her in bed, staring at the cracked open door until, finally, I fell asleep too. A warm beam of sunlight roused me awake. I looked to my side. Charlie wasn't there. Stretching my arms, I climbed out of bed and yawned. All the strangeness of yesterday felt smaller in the morning light, like a fading nightmare. As I stepped down to the hallway, the smell of breakfast filled the air. Eggs, bacon, coffee, the only meal that Charlie knew how to make. Downstairs, I went into the kitchen, but Charlie was nowhere to be seen. Instead, Thomas stood over the stove, humming a happy tune, making scrambled eggs. His family, minus the Mia Akin, sat at the table and lingered on the edge of the kitchen, at a loss. Thomas looked towards me and smiled. Morning, Eve. How do you like your eggs? Where's Charlie?
Who?
My girlfriend? Oh, she mentioned something about picking up a generator from town for the basement. I raised an eyebrow. Leaving without telling me? That wasn't like Charlie. She didn't want to wake you up, he said. Is everything okay? Yeah, I'm good. Unsettled, I stepped around the corner and pulled out my phone. Time to call Charlie. I tapped the screen and nothing. I held the power button down. Nothing? Dead battery? I paced up to the bedroom and plugged it in. Still nothing. I blew on the socket. Nope. Factory reset. Nada. I definitely charged this thing last night. Did Charlie unplug it and put hers on? Maybe. Regardless, I kept my phone plugged in just in case it started working again, and I returned downstairs. Back in the kitchen, Thomas had joined the rest of his family at the table. Can I borrow your phone? I asked. He looked at me, chewing on a mouthful of eggs. He swallowed. Don't have one. I blinked in disbelief and looked at Paige. Can I borrow yours? She shook her head. We don't have phones. A modern family without cell phones? That might be the strangest thing to happen yet. What was going on here? Frustrated and getting more weirded out with each exchange, I turned for the foyer, just to borrow the neighbor's phone. Halfway across the living room, I stopped short, above the fireplace where I had removed the nails, and now unfamiliar painting now hung. A large painting of a tree line, the edge of a dark green forest. Vaguely familiar. It looked old, almost menacing. I glanced towards the living room coffee table. The hammer was gone. Did Charlie put it up to troll me? Maybe, but it seemed a bit much, even for her. I continued for the front door. I need to phone Charlie now. Dressed for winter, I stepped onto the driveway. My heel crunched against something. Looking down, I lifted my foot. Buried in the snow was a small, shiny object. Charlie's locket. That's the end of chapter 1. We'll read chapter 2 next week.